decentralizing radio broadcast to embrace rural content at regional levels for effective information dissemination. I'd like to let you know that we operate on three frequencies, 91.1, 91.3, and 97.7, and we broadcast in English, Ewe, and Akan languages, making us certainly the radio station with the largest air coverage in the region and beyond. Anyway, my name is Kafi Kumaga. First of all, Madam and, Excellency, Madam and Excellency President, you are welcome to the studios.
Yeah, thank you, Kafi. How are you?
Yeah, we are doing well.
Good.
Well, as tradition is, you know, in our traditional areas, when you go, even they know what happens. They know your mission of coming, they still ask you, why do you come here? You say, oh, so this time around, even if you know, why are you in the Volta region?
Well, it's exactly like you said in your introduction that I've embarked on an accounting to the people tour, and it's taken me through the western and eastern regions. And for the past 2 days, I've been here in the Volta region. I'm taking stock of the projects and programs we've been implementing in the various regions, looking at what the status of those projects are. For those that have been completed, we're commissioning them. For those that are ongoing, we're inspecting and looking at the status of work. And for those that are yet to start, we're finding what the challenges and the needs of the people are. I'll take, for example, Dambai, where I was yesterday, or Dodi Pepesu, where I was the day before. In those two places, we commissioned the first segment of the Eastern Corridor Road, which is completed, almost 50 kilometers of road. And in Dambai, we also commissioned the Rara Dambai Road, which is completed. In Chidere, we commissioned the Community Day Senior High School, which is also completed. And then I gave directives to move the Nchumurumai Community School immediately into the new premises. And so we have 1,400 students who are going to move immediately into the new school. And so these are some of the things that we're doing. In Dambai, the chief, you know, spoke about their first need, which is a hospital. And so going around the country, I'm not only commissioning the projects and programs that we have completed, but we're also inspecting ongoing projects. For instance, we stopped at Dapa to inspect the Cocoa Road. That goes from Dapa to Pampariya to Ahamansu. We went and inspected that road. We also stopped at Papasi to inspect the road from Papasi Junction to Papasi. And so, yes, we're doing quite a lot, both inspecting, interacting with the people, and I think it's been quite a successful visit.
Well, I'll be coming back to that. But once you have really touched on the road, I will continue with the road. But I was wondering how to do something at once. You've gone explain. Let me quickly put in this segment on the road issue, which you have already, hinted at. Because, honestly, the people of both of you are thinking that the Eastern Corridor Road is being constructed in several routes, yes, in several slots, we agree. But it has been noticed that the first slot from Asikuma towards Hafe, which was awarded about 6 years ago, is still being done at a slow speed. In addition, the slot from Hafe to Koko is also not moving as expected. What is the cause of the delay, and can you please elaborate on other road projects like you started in the region?
I believe that you haven't visited the Asikuma to Hafe stretch recently, and so if you haven't, that might be the reason why you would say so. Or the Hafe to Hohoi stretch. If you go, work is going on very actively at the moment. Indeed, quite a long stretch of the Asikuma to Hafe road has started to be asphalted. The asphalt overlay is being put on it. Mm-hmm. And then with Hafe to Hohoi, the contractor has cleared a long segment of the road and has started to work on the base of the road. And so work is progressing quite strongly. You're right that it was one of the first segments that we began.
Mm-hmm.
And because it has been on Government of Ghana budget, it didn't have dedicated financing. And so it has been slower than the segment from Dodo Pepesu to Nkwanta. The segment from Dodo Pepesu to Nkwanta was financed by the EU and Government of Ghana. And so that went quite much quicker than the segment from Asikuma to Hohoi. But I can assure you that work is progressing very fast currently. And we've actually put a new contractor with the completion of the whole Fume Road. The contractor who was on it, Rolida, who did a very good job. I'm sure you've seen the quality of work on whole Fume. He's been moved onto the Eastern Corridor. And so he is taking the Hohoi to Jasikan stretch. And it's also going to continue from Jasikan to Kadibi. And so I think that work is progressing quite well. And when that road is completed, it's going to be a very, very, it will have a very important impact on the economic development of the Volta region. Not only the Volta region, but the northern and upper east regions, because that road stretches from Kulungungu and Garutimpani in the upper east region and comes all the way to Mapanduri in northern region, goes through Yindi to Bimbila, and then from Bimbila to Otidamanko, Voti, Adamanko, continues to Kwantan, comes to Kadibi, from Kadibi to Jasikan, Jasikan to Hohoi, Hohoi to Abe, Abe to Asikuma, then across through Japong, across the Adomi Bridge to Tamaranabout. That's one of the longest stretches of roads we have ever undertaken at one time.
And then one conjecture asking those questions, that is it because you bit too much, that's why the program has delayed? Maybe you took too much on board. Is that, would that be a reason?
No, I don't think so. Actually, in our 2008 manifesto, we conceptualized two additional roads which we believed would improve the transport network in the country. And the first we're tackling is the Eastern Corridor. There is also the Western Corridor, and that stretches from Elubu through to Hamile. And currently we're working on segments of VET, Gambia number 2, Chemasu, and some of those areas will eventually form part of the Western Corridor. And so it is a vision that we set ourselves. Of course, I've always said that development is not an event, it's a process. And so you cannot, imagine that a road of almost 800 kilometers will be ready in 1 year. It takes a couple of years to get it ready. But eventually, when we have the Eastern Corridor, the Western Corridor, and the Central Corridor, road transport and movement in Ghana will be very, very much enhanced, and it will contribute to Ghana's economic development in a major way.
Thank you very much, Your Excellency. But a while ago, you scratched about this cocoa project. How many of them are you doing? Because I know it's a nationwide project that is ongoing, this cocoa routes. How many of them are going to be done in the Volta region?
There are many of them being done in the Volta region. All the routes that I mentioned to you when I said we did inspection at Dapa are all cocoa routes. Dapa, Pampariye, Ahamansu area is a major cocoa growing area. From Rarura, Dambai, all those areas are major cocoa growing areas. Actually, if you cross Hohoi, that's the cocoa growing belt in the Volta region. And it used to be very, very, strong in cocoa production. Unfortunately, over the years, the perception is that Volta region no longer produces cocoa, and so there's not been attention, in that area. And so Cocoa Board is revamping cocoa production in the Volta region.
Mm-hmm.
As we came down the road, they have set up several seedling producing facilities. You see the black net. If you go around the region, you see they've put black net and they've employed young people to grow the seedlings, and they're giving these seedlings to the farmers free of charge. And while I was talking, I was telling the chiefs that, look, all of you in this area, we're revamping cocoa production. And so when we say that there's unemployment, one of the major hindrances to getting the young people to find some work to do is the issue of land. Land is difficult to come by. On government side, we're giving all the inputs free. The seedlings are free. The agric extension officers who will come and help you to peg your farm and plant the seedlings do not charge you anything. And all the inputs you need for cocoa growing are free.
Okay.
All the fertilizer is free. And so the only hindrance to the young people taking advantage of this program that government is implementing is land. And so if the chiefs will release land so that young people can grow cocoa, you'll be surprised at how much income they can earn. I know of colleagues, friends who are working in the public services, but who at the weekend go to their cocoa farms because they earn more from their cocoa farms than they earn as a salary. And so maybe, Kafui, you would look at this and then see if you can get some 5 acres in your hometown.
I will. Anyway, on transport, let's quickly go to this, because it has been something that a mantra that we say in this region that, so let me say, I hope we see this airport before we go into our graves. This is the state of affairs of the regional airport. Because I'm going to say, finally, that we hope we see this airport or a plane fly from home before we go to the graves. What is the state?
My understanding is that the airport, it's preferred to be called airport. We call it an aerodrome.
Aerodrome.
Yeah. My understanding is that the aerodrome will be completed in the first half of next year.
Mm.
But if you go to the site, the contractor is on site working very seriously. Meshes Amandi Construction, they're working very seriously. And let me explain. It is a project initiated by the Ghana Airports Company, and it's financed by the Ghana Airports Company 100%. It's not using government of Ghana financing.
Okay.
It is part of our new public debt management strategy, where we're encouraging state-owned enterprises to borrow on their own balance sheets and not pile their debt onto the public debt. Before, VRA, ECG, Ghana Airports Company, GAPOHA, everybody borrowed, and then it became a debt for the entire people of Ghana. Today, we're telling them, go on to the market, borrow your own money, be responsible for a repayment of that money.
Thank you very much. Don't forget that you're on 91.1, that's Boston Radio, but we're also live on our sister stations across the length and breadth of the country. You're on a Unique FM, our mother station in Accra, on 95.7. You're on a Bulu FM, 96.5 in Kenya. You're also on Radio Central in Cape Coast on 92.5. You're going to Kandy on 2City Radio on 94.7. Okay, Excellency, let me turn attention to the economy, because that is where the hot seat starts from, because the economy is not resilient or strong, and everything seems to fall apart. Mr. President, now let's go a little bit in understanding the economic situation of the country. Are you in a position to tell us? Because the government is accused of borrowing excessively and very little to show for it. How do we react to this accusation, so-called?
Just before I start to talk about the economy, I wish to also indicate that this afternoon I'm cutting the sod for two important roads in the water region. That is Japon through Volo to Adivome Road. We're cutting the sod for work to start. And then we're also cutting the sod for Japon to Abutia. There's a road that goes from Japon and comes straight to Abutia without having to come through Sokode and come round. And so we're cutting the sod for those roads. So I just wanted to add that.
Yes, but you're taking the wind up myself. I wanted that to be the last tip so that the people of Japan need to be gathering for you.
Okay.
Because I learned the time is 4 p.m. So I wanted it to be the last bit.
So we'll come back there.
It's good information for them.
We'll come back there.
Anyway, we're talking about the economy. Is it resilient or is it taking a downtrend?
Yeah, the economy is very resilient. And I'll tell you why. A lot of economists don't know that under the extended credit facility of the IMF, this year we started zero central bank financing. So every expenditure government is making, it's not borrowing from the central bank. In the past, government had a 10% ceiling with which to borrow from the central bank. So if there was no liquidity, then we went to the central bank and we could borrow up to 10% of the previous year's budget from the central bank. Indeed, we used to go beyond 10%. By the end of the year, you must not have been above 10%. And so you could go to 20%, but at the end of the year, you balance your books and make sure that you are not above 10%. As I speak, the agreement we have under the extended credit facility is zero central bank financing.
Mm-hmm.
So with every payment and expenditure we are making, this economy is more resilient and more disciplined, because we're using the revenues we're collecting. We're not going to the central bank and borrowing money from the central bank. And so I just want economists to take note of that. And so when you're talking about an economy in crisis, an economy that is self-reliant and is not going to the central bank and taking money is more resilient than one that goes to the central bank to take money to pay salaries. And so we're doing central bank financing. But aside from that, at any time that we have had international commodity shocks, especially with our major exports, you immediately see the signs in the economy. As I speak today, two commodities account for almost 50% of Ghana's exports, and that is gold and oil. And we have seen a collapse in oil prices. We've seen a collapse in gold prices. Gold used to be above $2,000 per ounce. Today, gold is $1,200 per ounce. Oil used to be above $93 per barrel. Today, oil is just slightly above $40. And so, if we had the same circumstances in the past, this economy will see a strong deterioration in all the macro signals and all that. And yet, the macro economy is performing well. At the end of 2012, we had 12% deficit to GDP. By last year, we had come down to, the year before, we had come down to about 9.6. And last year, we came down to 7.3. And this year, the deficit target is 5.3. And so it shows that on the macroeconomic front, the economy is showing resilience. Aside from that, inflation is slowing.
I'm going to ask this.
Inflation is slowing, and we expect that it should start to decline. And when inflation comes down, interest rates will also follow. The CD has stabilized. It's been 3.7, 3.8 for quite a long time. And so that cannot be an economy that is in crisis. The public debt is slowing. And so there are many signs that show that the economy is doing much better. But if you don't believe me as your president and you believe outsiders, then let me give you the World Bank's last update of April 12, 2016. It says Ghana's real domestic product growth is projected to rebound to 5.2% in 2016. It means that we're expected to grow at about 5.2% in 2016. From 3.4% in 2015. And let me say that the average growth predicted for Africa, average, is 3.3. And so if we are growing at 5.2, then definitely we're growing far above the African average. And so it says it's expected to rebound to 5.2% in 2016 from 3.4% in 2015, reflecting the positive impact of a more stable energy supply and increased contribution from the oil, gas, and agricultural sectors. Energy supply is expected to improve following the emergency measures, including the use of power badges. This is the World Bank, it's not me, and so if you don't believe me, at least this is an external body looking in. The country's medium-term growth prospect is strong, with 8.2% predicted in 2017. 8.2%. Predicted in 2017 and moderating to 7.5% in 2018 under the assumption that the fiscal adjustment measures being taken remain on track with the support of the IMF and other development partners. This is not me speaking.
Yes.
And so it shows, from what the World Bank has said, that with the structural adjustment measures that we have taken, the economy is more resilient and is back onto the path of growth. And so we need to strip the political propaganda from our discourse. Often, of course, in an election year, you expect that people will exaggerate and try to use the economic political football. But the facts are there for everybody to see that this economy is growing, this economy is more resilient. We're expecting the final GDP numbers. And when the final GDP numbers come out, we'll be able to determine debt to GDP and all the other indicators that are based on GDP, because then we'll know the actual GDP growth numbers. But for now, we are based on speculation. IMF says 3.3, World Bank says 3.5. We believe we'll grow maybe at about 3.8 or closer to 4%. And so we'll wait for the final outcome and we'll see.
Yes, and you seem to paint a bright prospect for this country in terms of economy, but the mantra in the public domain is that we can feel it in our pockets. That's the mantra. The economy is becoming resilient and inflation is coming down and things are getting normalized. Why can't we feel it in our pockets? But that's the mantra.
The point is, when you talk about the economy, what the economy does is it creates opportunities for people. And so you would envision that as the economy grows, it throws out natural jobs. that people can take advantage of. But if you do not have the skills or you do not have the capacity to take advantage of a growing economy, then you will not feel it in your pocket. If you take, let me just take the Southern Volta, for example. Southern Volta Basin is becoming the major rice-producing hub of Ghana. And so if you go to South Tongu and North Tongu and all those places, there are young people who have started to grow rice and are changing their lives. As I said in Suchari, and I sat with a young boy called Godwin, and he's got a 4-hectare rice field. And Godwin is producing rice. He's looking after his family. He is taking his 3 children to school, paying their fees from his rice field. It's the same thing I just said about cocoa production. The thing is, if you say feeling it in your pocket, it doesn't mean that the president is going to come from place to place and count money and give to everybody to put in his pocket. The economy will provide the opportunities, but it's for the people to take advantage of it. And that's what I was talking about cocoa. I said we're growing about how many thousands of seedlings of cocoa in the Northern Volta area. Government is doing its bit. We're giving the seedlings out for free. We're giving all the inputs, agri extension advice and everything for free. And so if the chiefs give the young people the land, you understand, then we can grow cocoa and the young people can take advantage. A new farm has come up in the North Tongu area, Musha Hamad Farms. And that farm alone is employing almost 1,000 young people suddenly to work. And so these are things that are happening. But if anybody is sitting with his hands crossed and saying that, if they say the economy is going, why am I not feeling in the pocket? You need to get up and take advantage of the opportunities that the economy is creating. And that is how money comes into your pocket. We're doing public works all across the country. We're building roads. We're building community-based senior high schools. While we're building the first 4 community-based senior high schools, it employed 600 people, carpenters, steel vendors, masons, and all that. But if you have no school and you don't have the scale of a carpenter or a mason or something, you probably cannot get employed. And that's why we're starting the youth enterprise youth employment agency programs. We are putting young people into NDTI to go and learn skilled professions. If you are a tipper truck driver, an excavator driver, you are certain to find work. But if you don't have any skill, then it's not possible that even if the economy were growing, you would find money in your pocket. And so one of the things government is highlighting and pushing is to try and do the skills development program so that more people are having the skills to go into the world of work. And that's why we're doing the Skills Development Fund. And I can give you several examples. I mean, there are many young people who are being trained in the agricultural sector. I won't talk about that. If you go to the Adansi area, there is a piggy project where people who are interested register, and together with the University of Science and Technology, they provide them animal production division, they provide them with extension advice to produce pigs for the market. And so they show them what feed to give to them, how to market it per kilo, using scales and all that. If you go to the poultry sector, assistance is being given to the poultry industry. You go to pharmaceuticals, we're giving pharmaceutical companies almost $50 million cedis to expand their production and to be able to employ more people. If you go to the jewelry sector, the Export Development and Agriculture Investment Fund has given money for training apprenticeships in jewelry making. And those young people are learning how to do jewelry and being able to use the gold that we produce here in Ghana to produce jewelry. And so the point is, however fast the economy grows, if our people are not taking advantage of it, then there's not going to be money in people's pockets. And so we are creating the enabling environment, and we will assist our young people to take opportunity of it by providing them with the skills that allow them to go into the world of work.
Thank you, Excellency. But Excellency, you talked about it because of one or two problems, that because of people who don't have the skills, that's why they can't get employment. And we know that there are several interventions that involve things. How viable do you think this year program is going to be like? Because we have several interventions that didn't last.
If I talk about the Skills Development Fund alone, the Skills Development Fund alone is estimated to have created 93,600 jobs. The Youth Employment Agency has just taken off this year. It used to be JIDA, and we reformatted it, took it to Parliament, gave it legislation. So it now has a structure. It has all the instruments for accountability set up. It has a board, a governing board. Before, JIDA didn't have one. And so I believe that the Youth Employment Agency is better situated now than JIDA was to be able to provide our young people with the skills. And what they're doing is they're taking the young people in for a two-year period. So for 2 years, you're going to receive an allowance. And while you're receiving that allowance, you're learning a skill either in community security. For instance, when I went to Chinderi yesterday, they had deployed the new community security youth under the Youth Employment Agency. They wear light blue shirts. They have the usual police boots, dark blue trousers. We stopped at a police station outside Chinderi, and the police station is manned by three people: the commanding officer, his assistant, and a community security Youth Employment Agency graduate. You know, and so there are three of them manning the police station, and these young people are scattered all over the country to assist the police service. And as they work over the 2 years, they're going to learn the discipline of the service. They're going to learn, you know, the ethics of the service, investigative procedure, and all those things. And so it makes it easy if in future we're going to recruit into the police service, instead of opening it up, just take these community security guys, because you don't have to train them extensively. They've already undergone some training. And so these are something. We have a health component where young girls who eventually want to become nurses would also be taken to do internships in hospitals. They will help with cleaning, they will help with laying the bed, they will help with looking after the patients, providing care and all that. And so it becomes easier for them if they want to go into the nursing profession. Aside from that, this year in the State of the Nation address, I said that we're going to diversify the economy. We have started an initiative on aquaculture, shrimp farming. And let me say that aquaculture with shrimp farming, we've gone from producing 3,000 tons of fish to currently almost 40,000 tons of fish from aquaculture. That is fish growing. And so if you look on the Volta Lake, you see all these cages, you know, with people growing fish. And we've determined that by the year 2020, we should be growing 100,000 tons of fish from aquaculture sources alone. Because currently, Ghana is importing 400,000 tons of fish. And so if we can produce 100,000 tons of fish from aquaculture, that will cut our import down by 100,000. You know that the fish stocks in the sea are dwindling because of overfishing. And so then it means that we must produce as much of the fish, you know, in controlled conditions like aquaculture as we do. And so we're starting an initiative on shrimp farming to introduce it in the coastal areas where they have salty water, because these are tiger shrimps and they prefer salty water. And so we've mapped that whole belt where the shrimp can do well, and we're going to introduce shrimp farming there. Vietnam alone is making almost $2 billion from shrimp exports to the United States and Europe. And so it could become a big export item. We're diversifying into coffee. We used to produce a lot of coffee before. That has gone down. And so the Cocoa Board have charged them with the responsibility to reintroduce cocoa to the coffee, to the places it was grown. So this year alone, Cocoa Board is beginning with 6 million coffee seedlings. And they're going to register the coffee farmers and teach them how to grow the coffee. They're working with a French company called Tuton that is assisting them, you know, to reintroduce coffee and produce a Ghana brand of coffee, which we can market internationally. And so there are a lot of things that we're doing, you know, to create opportunities for employment. And I do think that these things, like I said, development is not an event, it's a process. And so often when you are a part of the process, you don't realize that the process is moving. If you sit in an aeroplane, you hardly think that the aeroplane is moving. Mm-hmm. But if you're standing outside and you see it passing, you know that it's moving at a very high speed. And so often we are tempted to believe that there's nothing happening because we're in the bus or we're in the aeroplane, and so we think that the aeroplane is not moving. But it is moving, and I think that if you look at all the predictions for Ghana, they look very good, from the World Bank to the Economic Intelligence Unit. Recently, the Economic Intelligence Unit published their report on Ghana, and said that Ghana's prospects from 2017 are very bright, and even predicted that whoever wins the 2017 election is likely to be in power for a long time. And I don't know, I think I had a copy of the...
Well, we were talking to His Excellency, the President, live on Foster Radio. He's telling us issues bothering this country, and particularly those of us in the voter. But don't forget, we're also live on our sister stations like Radio BAR in Bonoa and Radio Savannah on 91.2 in the northern region, Upper West Radio on 90.1, as well as Rural Radio on 89.5 in the East region. And our sister station in the Fort Worth, Cool FM, Cool FM, Island on 103.5 has also hooked onto the program. And so you are so welcome. Stay on. Now let's jump onto the issue of health, with the permission, Your Excellency.
And just before we go there, I was looking for this quotation, the Economic Intelligence Unit. It says, whichever party wins in 2016 is expected to preside over an improving economic situation. That is because of the foundation we have laid. And it's expected to preside over an improving economic situation, and this will bolster their support in 2020, making re-election the most likely outcome. This is the Economic Intelligence Unit.
Anyway, that's good. But the unfortunate thing is that even if you win, you can't go beyond 2020.
No.
Thank you so much, Your Excellency.
We're doing it for posterity.
That's great. Yes, Your Excellency, we know your government is doing much, putting up so much infrastructure development. So the health sector, such as the teaching hospitals, regional district hospitals, the chief compounds all over in the rural areas. But the major issue over is the efficient and sufficient, staff and operation of the NDIS is kind of problem. Because some of the service providers complain that they are not being based on time. As a result, they demand cash at the point of service delivery. What is happening to the scheme? How do we make it effective and sustainable? Because with all this, facilities coming up there, nurses, training colleges, everything coming up, but and the scheme that is supposed to support we the poor ones seems to be dying off.
The evidence does not support it. If anything, the health insurance is covering more people than it ever did before. We have gone. I wish I had the statistics immediately. I'll be able to get it for you, but let me just talk generally for now.
Okay.
We have gone, if you talk about utilization of the National Health Insurance, outpatient utilization of the National Health Insurance, we have gone, if you take 2009, outpatient utilization was 16,629,000. That is visitations, outpatient utilization, the number of outpatients that were seen under the National Health Insurance. If you take today, 2014, it has gone from 16 million to 29,637,000. 16 million to 29 million. That is outpatient utilization. It shows that this National Health Insurance is catering for far more people than even how many years ago, 6 years ago. And so you cannot say that this is a health insurance that is not beneficial to people. It's catering for more people, polyclinics, and even to CHIPS compounds. Now, every CHIPS compound is supposed to be manned by a qualified nurse or a midwife or, a physician assistant. And so we are deploying these people all across the country. And we're giving clearance for the employment of some more nurses. There's one worrying phenomenon that I think we should take note of. There are few nursing training schools privately established that do not have accreditation from the National Accreditation Board. And yet they are turning out nurses. And that is a worry, because government employs nurses. And like I said, we have nurses who are bonded because we subsidize their training. Government provides facilities for them to train. And so we bond them to work for us. And so our first obligation is plus nurses. And they are, like I said, private training institutions that are turning out nurses. Some of them are accredited, yes, that's true. But others are not accredited. And yet they're coming out and saying that nurses were unemployed, you know. And so that needs to be streamlined. And that is because nursing training is still under the Ministry of Health. I think that we must move all training institutions under the Ministry of Education. And if that is done, then the Ministry of Education is better able to supervise accreditation of these institutions. And so one of the major proposals that we discussed in Cabinet that I'm bringing forward is that all the nursing and health training institutions be transferred to the Ministry of Education.
Okay. That's good for health. Thank you. We were talking to His Excellency, the President, on Voice of Star Radio in the Voice of Regional Capital. Oh, and don't forget that we are live also on assistance stations. Radio BRI 93.5 in the Bono Ahafo. Radio Savannah 91.2 in the Northern Region. Radio Upper West 90.1 in the Upper West Region. And as well, like I said, our sister station here in the Bono. Cool FM is also hooked up. Well, before finishing, the Excellency, we turn attention to education because it's another 20 area like health. We know that the education infrastructure is generally improving nationwide. Talking about the Bono Regional Loan, we can cite the E-Blocks Day Senior High School that you commissioned recently at Chinderi and Nkwanta, that you have that is in place, and we learned this afternoon more from home. Maybe from the market, you'll be going to Poly. You're going to just have a commission in the laboratory there to help it turn into a technical university. But having said all these, do we have a human resource to operate these institutions that are coming up effectively?
Yes, we do. In the Bosa region alone, the community day senior high schools we are building are 12 community day high schools. And as you said, I've commissioned Nkwanta, commissioned Chinderi. Several others are at various stages of completion, and I'm sure that in the next couple of months, we'll be able to bring all those ones on stream. But if you permit me, I have the list here. I have Nkwanta, Chinderi, Kwame Krum, that's in the Akuya district, Abonukope. We have one at Damanko, Advono, Avenopeme, Dambai, Osramani, Fodome, Abutia, Shia, Strefe, Aflao, and Ziope, and also in the South Tongu district. So these are all ongoing community day senior high schools. And I've given instruction that as soon as the school is ready and is handed over, the Ministry of Education should go ahead and populate it. They should not wait for me to come and commission before they let the children go in. As soon as the school is handed over, they should go ahead, appoint the head teacher, and let him start admissions so that the children can have the opportunity to be able to have a secondary education. With the four first ones that I commissioned, already in those four schools, they've recruited almost 2,000 students. So these are 2,000 young people whose education would have terminated at the GHS level because they did not get entry into senior high school. And so already 2,000 young people have gotten access to secondary education just by virtue of our building four of the senior high schools. And like I said yesterday in Chinderi, we relocated 1,400 students into the new school. The school has a capacity of 1,500, and we've moved
1,400 already
into the school. So it's left with just 100, you know, to reach its capacity. So what we're doing is we're identifying the other secondary schools around, and then we're going to expand their capacity so that they can absorb more of the children in the area. But ultimately, we need to look at the possibility of putting another school in that catchment area because it looks like the volumes are quite high. But we currently are recruiting 2,500 maths and science teachers. We're giving the financial clearance for 2,500 maths and science teachers to be recruited, both for the new community day senior high schools and also the existing senior high school. So that is ongoing. Aside from that, we're giving bursaries to students. You know, under the master's program, we have given almost 9,000 bursaries to young students who are studying science and maths. Other bursaries like the World Bank one, which covers 10,000 students, are being disbursed. But to talk about the polytechnics, yes, we are converting the polytechnics to technical universities, and one of the things I'm insisting on is that they maintain their core mandate of technical and vocational education. We don't want them to walk in the footsteps of the already existing public universities and expand the space for humanities in the technical universities. And so they must stick to their core mandate of technical and vocational education. I was talking about the marketplace, the job marketplace, looking for new kinds of graduates, not our book-long grammar kind that we learned. And that currently the job market is looking for skilled, hands-on, practically trained graduates. Unfortunately, an academic said that it's not the duty of universities to produce skilled graduates. I don't know. He's probably not heard of competence-based training, and he's probably not heard that currently for most universities, especially technical universities, they allow the students to go out of school for 1 year and work on the factory floor to gain skills before they come and complete their degree programs and go into the world of work. So how somebody will say that universities are not required to produce skilled graduates, I don't know. Even doctors, before doctors are recruited, they are made to do their housemanships and things. They do practicals, you know, based on what they've learned in theory. And so that's what the world is looking for, the world of work is looking for now. Nobody wants to take a green graduate today, train him, because labor is highly mobile now and is attracted by higher remuneration. So I want to take you from the university green, train you for 5 years, and then when you are skilled in somebody, somebody offers you a higher salary, and then you move. You know, so increasingly, the employers are looking for who are skilled. Yeah, and that's the truth.
Okay.
We did a stakeholders conference, Ministry of Education, Ministry of Employment, and Association of Ghana Industries, and Chamber of Commerce, and we discussed with the business people and industry, and they told us, they said, look, we're looking for...
Please go ahead.
Yeah. It says we're looking for people who are skilled that we can put to work, and only with a little polishing, you know, fit them into our businesses.
Well, I will take you to one last but one question, because I'm looking at the time. Your Excellency, there is one area that most, let me say, politicians don't want to touch on. You want to touch it, it's like we are trying to down them. That's the issue of corruption. Mr. President, corruption is a thorny issue in this country, we all know. While some people see it as a perception, others see it as a reality. As the chief executive of this country, how do you view the issue of corruption?
Well, I'm not a politician who is afraid of corruption. I'm prepared to talk about it every day, and I speak about it every day. Indeed, corruption is not a perception, it's a reality. Corruption exists. I mean, over the years, we've all come across incidences of corruption. Either bribes have been demanded from us, or we have offered bribes to people for one reason or the other. Everybody has encountered corruption in their lives. Perception is the means of measuring corruption, because there is no other instrument for measuring corruption, because the giver and the taker are not willing to talk about it. And so it's by measuring people's perception that it's not scientific. By measuring people's perception that you're able to determine, you know, what the level of corruption is. But that also, everybody will tell you, has its flaws. Because in a country that is open, that has a vibrant media, where people have free expression, the perception of corruption is likely to be higher than a closed society that does not have free expression, that does not have a vibrant media. And so corruption is not discussed. The more you discuss corruption, the more people's perception of corruption heightens. And so if you say you're just measuring people's perception, then you might say that corruption is higher in one country than another, when really it is not. But we have, you know, institutions that are good at measuring these things. Transparency International is one of the respected institutes that measure corruption. And increasingly, every year from 2012, Ghana has done well on the corruption perception index. There is more talk and discussion of corruption, because my government is prepared to investigate, not only expose, investigate and sanction corruption.
That is alleged.
He said that in many cases, corruption, sanctions against corruption were exacted only after governments went out of power. This is the first government that actually is investigating, you know, corruption under its tenure and sanctioning people who hold a public position.
So you're not true that you have a soft spot for, you're corrupt, officials, the ministers and whatever, DCs and Cs. They alleged that you have a soft spot for them. You are not just changing their positions when they are caught or you change responsibilities as that. So can you react to that?
Not exactly. where evidence of corruption is found, we investigate and we sanction. I don't know of what incidents those references are. I've dropped more ministers and, dealt more with my appointees than other governments have done.
I will thank you for that, Mr. President. But I will quickly want you to just wrap up for me by yourself. The two days, let me say 2.5 days, because we are yet to go to Pali, the market, and you end up at dropping. What has been your own evaluation assessment of your approximately 2.5 days that you have been in the region? How do you feel? How do people receive your messages have gone down well? Assess yourself.
Well, I've never been one who assesses myself. I think that it's the good people of Ghana who do that assessment. But we've been received very well, everywhere we've gone. And I'm very grateful to the people of the Volta region. It's a region that is, I'd say, on my heart. And I know that the Volta region has so much potential if we're able to unlock it. And that's why I'm passionate about the things that we're doing here. In the southern part of the region, there's potential for salt production, there's potential for aquaculture, there's potential for rice growing. In the northern part, there's potential for all kinds of agriculture, there's potential for cocoa, coffee, palm, and everything. And that's why we're fast-tracking these modules in this region, so that we can make it not only the breadbasket, but a major cash crop, a producer for Ghana. And some of the things that we need to put in place to take advantage of it is to improve the road network, is to provide better health care, is to provide education and putting the infrastructure for people to be able to do that, is to improve the transportation network. Just on this trip, when I was coming from Eastern Region, I inaugurated the ferry service from Agodeke in the Afram place to Pando, Toko. And that makes it possible for you to come from the Volta region and cross into Eastern region and continue to Kumasi without having to go round through Accra or go round through the Northern region. I restored ferry services between Ketekachi and Kojokrom, so that you can, and then we're doing the road from Kojokrom through Kamida, so to Atibubu, so that you can come from Ketekachi, cross the with the ferry, continue to Atibubu, turn left through Mampong to Kumasi. And so we're doing everything, to improve the social and economic infrastructure so that our people in this region can take take advantage of the opportunities that are created. But we've been very well received. We had several debates. And indeed, the chiefs almost always did my work for me, because I'm on an accounting to the people tour, and so normally I'll talk about the things we're doing in the particular area and talk about the ongoing projects and all that, and then also interact with the chiefs and know what their felt needs are. But often by the time I get there, the chiefs are the ones outlining, the projects we've done and thanking government for it, and then asking...
Thank you very much, Your Excellency.
But just to end... I just want to remind our younger brothers and sisters that from the 28th April to the 8th of May, the voters register will be open. And so those of them who have turned 18 years and above should remember to come out and register so that they can vote in the November 7th election. So all those who have turned 18 years above since 2012 are enjoined to go and register. And then also for adults who for one reason or other have not been registered, either they had traveled or they were indisposed or something, this is the advantage for them to put their names in the register. But for those who already are registered, they are not required to register again. And if they attempt to do that, it will amount to a double registration, and the EC's rules are that if you're, you register double, then both your registrations are kicking out, and so you'll not be able to vote on November 7th.
Thank you, finally. You told me there was a secret at Japan. What is it quickly? What secret is in there at Japan? Just after me.
Well, at Japan, I'm meeting with the people, and I'm sure that it's going to be a good meeting. Like I said, we're cutting sorts for two very important roads in the area, and I think that those are roads that have been on the hearts of the people for a long time, and so we'll have a good day in Japan.
Yes, Lindsay, thank you very much for your time. Well, I've been talking to His Excellency President John Dramani Mahama, who has been touring, the voting for the past 3 days. He's coming in the road today, and from here to Japan to finish off and get back to his main office in Accra. I'm grateful to all of you. My name is Kathy Kumala. Enjoy the day, and we wish you well. Bye-bye.